Hey, you guys, and welcome to the Steel Wars Hyper Chat. We are having our virtual celebration here across the globe, and on this fine afternoon, where I am anyway, it might be, I know it's morning in Australia, and I know it's very late at night, where our esteemed guest is joining us from, our old buddy. In these challenging times, we need a positive, fun-filled friend like our boy, Star Wars creature performer extraordinaire. He's been to Mars's castle. He's been to the spice mines of Kessel. Welcome back to the show, D-Tales.
What's up? Good to see you, buddy. Good to see you.
Good to be seen. Good to be seen, man. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm very good. And it's really weird I'm chatting to you today, because it was only last week I was listening to your podcast with Sam, which was absolutely amazing.
Ah, nice. Yes. Oh. That was, and this is a compliment, huge compliment, very detail-esque in that it was just joyous to hear of someone, you know, so cool having such a fun and sort of enthusiastic experience on the set of Star Wars. What sort of memories did that jog?
Oh, so many. You know, it's really weird, because you just assume we're all in a big melting pot and we all just know what each other are doing and things like that. But everything is so compartmentalized on one of those sets. I think it's good in a way, but at the same time, no one knows what anybody else is shooting, you know. And Sam, bless her, she, you know, she says she's an extra and things like that, but I realized she was more than that when I met her on set. Like, I didn't meet her until Rogue One, but we met in the alleyway on that set, and you can tell when someone,
You met in the space alleyway.
Yes, yes. When a droid meets a stormtrooper. But I could tell then she actually knew a lot more about how to shoot and what it was like working on the set with the different departments, especially creatures. I remember I kept bumping into her just when we were talking, when we were planning and walking through the crossover. It's like I crossed either before her or after or something like that. And the first AD or second AD came over to try and organize it. And then she just said, "Who's in that suit?" I said, "D." And she goes, "Oh, it's Sam." All right. And we literally had met and had a chat on the 100th episode when in London.
Yes.
When I was on the stage with you.
Yeah.
So it was weird, but she was absolutely front row. Right, and you obviously, Snoke was right at the back. Oh. Right. It's like this show keeps on giving, you know. It just keeps on giving. But
that wasn't fair, because afterwards you said, "Oh, you know, I didn't want to point him out at the time. You know, Snoke was in the audience." Now I'm like, come on. And that was the first weekend we had the stickers and everything, so it was we're riding high. And
I'm just glad I was able to keep it inside long enough to be able to give you that moment, like, what?
Oh, no, but you did end. So Dee did the 100th podcast at Celebration Europe, which was in London. And we did it on the floor. Like, we were sort of like a exhibitor sort of thing. And there was all these seats. And so people would sort of gather around. And it formed this really, like, cool little, like, sort of amphitheater. There was all the people on the seats, then people sort of stood, and it sort of blocked in the noise. It was quite good. And he did tell this story, and you can go back, episode 100, when he got to walk on the Millennium Falcon. And there was barely a dry eye in the house. So that was a pretty good way to end the podcast. But a better way would have been to do that story and then go, all right, that's it. And there's Snoke. And then and just run off.
Well, that hadn't been established at that point. It really hadn't been established. It was like these little gems, these little seeds that were growing, just happened to be in your audience that were growing. But so, yeah, I met Sam, and Sam kind of directed our little crossover. So we didn't need the first or second AD. And it was like she totally understood that I could barely see. I totally understood that she could barely see, but she could see more than I was, because I was just looking across at the alleyway. And it was just dark, and there were just a few people over there. At least she could see from one end to the other. And that's when I was like, oh, okay, yeah, you know, and because not everybody gets that, and not everybody can contribute to that little bit of choreography that's needed on a set. So, yeah, and
I like
see her go from strength to strength. It's amazing.
It's the blind leading the blinder.
Yes, yes. Yes, a droid putting his trust in a stormtrooper.
Yeah, in this day and age. Now, Sam had the big revelation on the set of The Rise of Skywalker, where she got the Palpatine reveal. Poe revealed that Palpatine was back, and the cast was like, oh. Did you ever have a moment like that where something was sort of. Someone walked on stage or mentioned someone and you were just like, hang on, what's going on here?
Yeah, I think I told you about it at some point. I must have, but it was like during that period of time when Harrison had broken his leg, you know, JJ was getting as much footage as he could of Maz's castle in case they needed to reshoot from different angles or add things or anything like that. So it was all kind of done. So we wouldn't have to go back to that set to a point. And it was that week when Harrison turned up, man. It was just like, everyone was, it was like, that's Harrison. You know, it was momentous. And
had you not seen him on set before?
No. No one, well, none of the creatures that I'm aware of in Maz's castle had seen him.
Okay, so that would be like, right, Saturday afternoon, you're playing Star Wars, and you've got all the best toys. Like, someone's dad's built them a diorama, it's so sick. And then Harrison Ford actually rocks up. So like, yeah, I'm going to play Star Wars with you guys as well. Like, that's like how much?
Well, not even that. Not even that.
That just changed the realness of it. Just like, oh no, this is Star Wars.
Yeah, but I mean, he just rocks up and he is Han Solo. We're on a set of Star Wars. There is no other character he can play. He could possibly be other than Han Solo. And JJ was toying around with the whole bit where Maz says Han Solo and the reactions. So there was one bit that was recorded where I looked over my shoulder and he was there. But when I actually looked over at rehearsal, he was there, right? And I'm wearing this face, thankfully, that's hiding my face, and with a big smile on it, and he just gives me that wry smile and that little nod. Whoa. And I was just like, I'm like, I turned back as cool as cucumber under my mask, thinking, that's Han Solo. That's Han Solo. You know, and then, on The Last Jedi, I think I told you also, I was watching the monitors, and this guy comes up behind me and says, I'm paraphrasing, but he says, that they look really, really cool. That's really, really cool. And I turn around and it's Mark Hamill, it's Luke Skywalker. Right, and I'm stood there,
and you're like, "Are you allowed to talk on this set?" Because
yeah. Well, it was kind of just offset, you know. And, just, And then that's, you know, and then that's when I just, the only thing that I could talk about without drooling and blubbering all over the place is, oh yeah, half of those guys can't see. So I was able to describe to him who could see, who couldn't see. And they got someone in their ear telling them. And then that's when he said, oh, I could do with someone in my ear from time to time, talking to me, tell me where to go, you know? And then he said, okay, I've got to be off. And I think that's when all the eyes started being aware that he was on set. And then he left, and I'm stood there like, I just met Luke Skywalker. I just met, you know, and there was no warning. There was no warning.
Nor should there be.
No. But you see, that's why I could relate to some of the stories that Sam was telling. But Sam was on some films that I was on, experiencing different things because her department were on different scenes. I only had one or two scenes in any of these films. And so when I'm hearing that, it's like, oh my, yeah, I'm taken back. I'm like, yeah, I get that. And I remember seeing one or two of these stormtroopers. I remember seeing that bit of that set and things like that. And having that kind of window into, oh yeah, here's a sneak peek. This is what we saw on that set. It was amazing. And Sam, you know, she does more than she wants to give herself credit for. All right, you can't just be a stormtrooper. You can't just be an X-wing pilot unless you get it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And not all the extras get it. It's like you put them in a costume. What do I do? And they get placed, right? But from being a stormtrooper to knowing what creatures are all about and moving creatures out of the way and stuff, things like that, let alone civilians and things like that. Much love to Sam. Much love.
She's the best. She is the best. Speaking of the best, we should, I know you're a big fan. As I was of Chadwick Boseman. I remember seeing photos of you going with maybe your nephew to see Black Panther.
Wow. Yeah.
How are you feeling, buddy?
Well, the first thing that has to come out of my mouth is Wakanda Forever and Chadwick Boseman. Still love you. I don't believe that when you die, it's all over. I believe this. He's still around, whether it's here or elsewhere. But a lot of love and a lot of thanks. It's amazing to be living through this period in time where superhero movies are being made and a story such as the Black Panther is included. You know, and especially the way that they included it. And his journey is just so humbling, let alone what he was going through during a lot of those moments, you know. But I remember seeing, was it James Brown's story and another baseball movie that he was in years ago. But just to follow an individual's career, it's kind of like, you know, when you look at Chris Evans and you're seeing his career and it's wow, and he gets there and Chadwick was in that lineup, you know, and he will forever be seen as being in that lineup and always known as the original Black Panther. And I made a comment to them on Facebook and it stands, sometimes Facebook can be hard to look at, you know, when you're seeing the news like that, you know. How did you take it?
It's just so tough when people lose someone that they got such inspiration from, and to see how many people drew inspiration from him and the character he played and what he brought to the character and how well he played it. And like that whole, I feel like Black Panther, the movie, and in the whole sort of Marvel universe, it's sort of meta. Like the success of the film means something with the message of the film as well. And with, you know, like superheroes of color have sort of, you know, been so, you know, the, you know, people would, you know, there's no money in it, whatever. But
yeah,
how people came out for that and supported it, and then the message that's in the film, and like just all that made this big meta thing that this film became more important than it's a superhero. Like, do you know what I mean? There was, it was sort of like, and I was talking about it last night on the stream, just the passion and the enthusiasm when they first showed that trailer at Comic-Con, and how they were just celebrating that, like, we did this, like, and this is going to be sick. And the film, it was like, it was kick ass as well.
Yeah.
And,
you know, it's that thing, is to be included, is to be recognized, you know, he would say, as being young, gifted and black, you know, and that doesn't always guarantee that you will get that spot. You know, you will be recognized. You will have any given opportunity to give that to an audience, or to inspire an audience, you know, in terms of my nephew and other people's young children that watch those movies, there is inspiration, and it's more than just a superhero movie, because it's a level of achievement, you know, that you don't normally see, you know. And when you do see it, you know, maybe it's a little bit cheaper, maybe people could be less bothered with it or whatever, but it was put on the same pedestal as every other Marvel movie that was coming out, and it had to be significant. And the way that they did it, you said, yeah, it was totally kick-ass, it was totally amazing. But what now outshines all of that is the fact that he was able to give and inspire, you know, during something he was keeping very quiet, you know. So he was going through some of this stuff while he's doing maybe Endgame, while he's giving a talk, you know. Just, you know, it's that's the heroic aspect to it for me. That's the real story right there. And for it to have come from an individual who's had this kind of a journey, you know, and this kind of an impact, it kind of makes sense that he had that hidden, you know. Why should anybody know? No one needs to know. It's like Robin Williams. No one needed to know, you know, but he still gave. You know, Alan Rickman, no one needed to know, but he still gave. But for also a black man, yeah, whose career has put him on the same level as Iron Man and Captain America, you know, and for a large portion community globally, you know, that have been looking for these kind of role models to look up to or to be inspired by. Absolutely, an absolutely majestic character, absolutely majestic man. So much love, and at least we still have him on celluloid, you know, or on DVD, whatever you want to call it. At least we still have him in the movies.
Yeah, and he'll sort of, you know, it's devastating, but he'll continue to inspire forever.
Yeah, that's the story.
So yeah, our hearts go out to everyone that's hurting on with that in an otherwise very uneventful year. So
yeah.
Yep. Hey, we're gonna take some calls. Details. He has been on the sets of The Force Awakens, Solo, A Star Wars Story, The Last Jedi, and Rogue One. So
yeah.
You can quiz him on all that action. I believe we did have someone in waiting to go. We've got Jeffro, who we will pull in. If you're watching live on YouTube, the link is in the show notes or in the chat. Hopefully we will have Jeffro up. He is connecting audio.
Here we go.
You there, Jeffro?
connected.
He's connecting. Holy smokes. Here we go. Jeffro, what do you know, buddy?
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ask to unmute. I'll push that button, see if that works.
There we go.
Jeffro!
I'm not used to actually participating in anything. I'm more a sort of behind the scenes, just watching sort of person. So here I am sitting all alone in a house where everybody's sleeping. But I wanted to make sure that I was actually here for seeing D, even though it is...
Hey, good to see you. Good to see you, buddy.
8 a.m. in the morning. So this is really random, bizarre for me, because I said I'm not that good with technology, so I had to install Zoom. And then it's saying, oh, do you want to press this and all that kind of stuff? So I can't believe that I'm actually... Yeah. Speaking to you, it's probably not even holding the phone correctly, but it is what it is.
Now, knowing my past history with anything live streaming, the fact that you're here, like our lack of talent combined, it's the will of the force, Jeffro. Hey, whereabouts are you calling from?
I'm calling from Ballarat. So
Ballarat,
Ballarat. You know where that is.
There's It's about 2 hours out of Melbourne, is it, Jeffro?
That is correct, yes.
But there's a little sort of schoolyard chant about Ballarat. What is it? Copycat. It's when if you copy someone.
Oh, yeah.
You're a copycat from Ballarat. Get the spoon or cop the strap or something like that. But it does end with child abuse. So
it's pretty sad. We then have to sort of drop that and say, well, you know, we're the home of the Eureka Stockade and sort of the gold fields and such. So anyway, stop getting off our dirty path.
what have you got for us today, Jeffro?
Well, I was just interested because I'm such a big fan of D, but I do enjoy the previous appearances that he's been on your show. And I just love his positivity and his great stories and things like that. So,
dude, bless you. Bless you so much.
It's really good sort of actually be able to speak to you in person. So that's pretty cool. So I love the fact that you are also a big Star Wars fan. So, you know, sort of... So the fact that you actually, you know, sort of was on the set and participated and then sort of you're involved in the fandom sort of after the fact, you know, I think that's sort of... It's a bit cliche, but it's like sort of you're giving back to the fans. So it's like, you know, sort of... You were there, we weren't, you're sharing stories and everything like that. So I think that's really good.
Of course. You know, but in my history, my introduction to Star Wars was from behind the scenes, watching the behind the scenes footage that was on TV, you know, from Star Wars to Empire Strikes Back and things like that, before I saw the movie. So my interest was sealed with the appearance of Jim Henson and Frank Oz in the making of on Empire, you know, when they were making Yoda, because, you know, I was young, I was watching Sesame Street. I knew Sesame Street, I knew the Muppet Show, you know? And so obviously I knew who Jim Henson was. And so that kind of tied that all in for me. And then being a fan from that point of view and then ending up on the set and I'm living the behind the scenes, that's a trip. You know, and so being able to share that with people and try and give them some kind of experience of my experience, you know, is the best thing that I can do. And also, Yeah, I love Star Wars, man. I can talk about this stuff all day, you know.
So do you see yourself ever trying to get into any of the other future television productions if they're sort of filming there in the UK? Or how do you think sort of your chances are of ever returning back to that sort of situation again?
Yeah, it's one of these things where there's nothing I feel that I can do. I've not been in a position in any way, but after any one of these movies, to actually kind of put myself forward. It was being left to my boss, Neil Scanlon. And if he felt that there was or some creatures that were in development that would suit me and I could perform in, then he would ask it, get his office to call me and find out what my availability was like. You know, so whenever we say, oh, I'm just waiting for that phone call, it is literally that, because we can't influence them whatsoever, no matter what it is, you know. So with the new stuff, I have no idea. If the same CFX department are working there, then maybe I've got a slither of a shot. As far as things like The Mandalorian, which is, oh, dude, that show, man. Wow, you know, that's beyond, because I know that's in LA. The thought of them kind of requesting me over there or something like that, that's really a huge stretch. Not impossible, but a huge stretch.
I've thrown up a photo of me and your boss, D. I'm not sure if you can see
that. Yeah, look at that.
He came just after one of our live podcasts finished at Scum and Villainy.
Right.
And right. He was a delightful man. Very nice.
Oh, bless him. I have my entire Star Wars career owing to that man, you know. And the every creature that I played was chosen by him for me to play, you know. So that's just an eternal gratitude that I have right there. But yeah, you know, I don't know if it, I'm so far away from that circle right now in regards to them redeveloping things. I have no idea what's being made. I have no idea what's going into production, what isn't going into production, what's going to be reshot. If it's going to be reshot, I have none of that. I have no information whatsoever. Yeah. But
you're on a don't call us, we'll call you basis.
Yeah. But also it's just having one experience is just mind blowing to be able to look back on. And with the interview still you were given with Sam, I was being taken back through several different movies. And I have association to them and I have memories of them. And it's such a blessing of a position to be in, to have those memories, you know. Being a Star Wars fan, had no reason to wear Star Wars stuff, you know. Being a Star Wars fan before, it didn't give me that right to just wear it every day and still continue to have a poster on my wall, you know. But it has provided me with just enough love to be able to keep going, because I know that I have family associated with those movies, you know, in many departments. So fingers crossed, you know, I would never not be available for a Star Wars production. Let's put it that way. I'd have to put it in a few riders.
I sort of wish now you sent me a message. Oh, I can't do the podcast today. Can't say why.
Oh, dude, don't say that. I would, you know, I love you still, but I would still appreciate that.
Oh, man. I do remember at Celebration in London, there was such a camaraderie with all you guys that were sort of creature performers and behind the scenes crew that were all, you know, a lot of people had just gone down there at their own, you know, they've just gone, probably bought a ticket and I remember just meeting all these people that were in the film, and everyone was just so pumped and like so happy to see each other again. And
I mean, after Force Awakens, there were quite a few departments, art departments, from fabrication to hair punching to wardrobe to sculpting to animatronics, that weren't able to actually put their names out there and say, well, I was a part of this, and so on and so forth. And I was under the impression that, well, I was hoping that there would be a moment where they could all take the credit that they deserve for being a part of these movies. I had no idea when I went down there to see Steel that the large majority were going to be there talking on panels, you know what I mean, saying, oh well, I did this and blah, and like I even recorded some of those, you know. And then after the chat we had, I was running into a few of the sculptors, from Ivan to Justin Pithlecki. I think Jake Lunt Davies was there. Maria Cork was there, who does Chewy. Yes. I was running into, yeah, we saw it. And all it was were big hugs, because outside of Pinewood, you know, it's kind of like, it's a completely different world. But when you're inside Pinewood, all of these people and all of these departments, they're your extended family, and it feels that way, you know. And they're helping create what it is you need to wear to add the sense of realism and Star Wars to the production. And you're wearing these, it's almost like these costumes of responsibility, you know. and you're jumping into them like a little soul. You're just jumping into them and then bringing them to life, you know. And that's something that they could never imagine how it was going to turn out. It's like, well, I make this stuff, but you know, hopefully someone will wear it and I'll get a good bead on the realism and how it works. And then you've got me in a suit, then you've got people who paint the skins on these or the faces, and then you've got people who do the animatronics for the eyes. You know, as a sculptor or someone like Jake Lunt Davies or Luke Fisher or Ivan, when you draw these things, you know, it must be a trip to then turn around and see that what you've drawn walking about, you know. Yes. It's got to be freaky. So yeah, there was so much love. There was so much love being shared, with lots of hugs. Even you got a hug from Maria, didn't you?
Well, one of my favorite little bizarre Star Wars Celebration memories is, I think it was you, me, and maybe it was Nathan, and we were talking to someone about the Wookiee fur and what it was.
Oh, yes.
And I think you just said, oh, let's just ask Maria. And you just hey, what fur do you use on Chewbacca? And she's like, yak. And I'm just like, this is amazing. Like, this is way better than Siri. This is the lady that did it. I was just like, Star Wars Celebration.
Yeah. I mean, is it Jeffro? Jeffro?
Yes, yes.
Have you been to any of these conventions and met any Star Wars people?
Only the ones in Melbourne. So I haven't gone to a celebration. I'd love to, but just the costs and the travelling and everything like that. So
who did you see in Melbourne? Was it from the prequels?
We've seen mostly the original actors, because Starwalking, the Star Wars Club here, brought out people like Kenny Baker and Dave Prowse and Jeremy Bullock and such. So, I'm very much a child of the 80s and 90s.
Oh, my God. Jeffro, you are old school.
Oh, very old school.
So did you go to Force 2?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
You could have been my friend. I was there by myself.
I could have been. So I've known people like Shane Morrissey and Darren Maxwell for about 20, 25 years.
Oh, 30 man.
Years, probably.
I was so mateless at that. I couldn't, and I'd see people that knew other people, and I'm like, how do they know anyone else? Like, didn't, yeah, it was just so, like, I had the best time, but I was very, it was a solo endeavor for sure, for sure. Right. But that's crazy that we were like,
yeah.
So that would have been 25 years ago. We were in the same room in Moorabbin.
Yeah, wow. Absolutely. Yeah. So, and I love the story you told long ago where you referred to Darren Maxwell as Patches. You used to know him as Patches because he had his patches on his jacket. So that was his name, Patches.
This guy, he's hilarious. He's sort of like Star Walking's like Don Rickles or something. He would do the auctions at every fan club meeting, Darren Maxwell. And he'd sort of just riff like Fozzie Bear or something, and sometimes super funny, sometimes hilariously not funny, but that was funny as well. And he had this sick jacket because I remember seeing him at a collector's fair for the first time, and it was just decked out with all these Batman, because he's like a Batman obsessive. He's in a documentary about collecting it, and. Yeah, so me and Jackie used to always call him Patches. And I actually drove him around LA about a year ago.
Yeah, he mentioned that. Yes, he was very thankful that you were able to sort of take him up to all the different locations. Yeah, he mentioned that.
Yeah, It was in Solo days because we went to Denny's and because all the Australians wanted to buy all their plastic cups and.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Dee, I took you for a bit of sightseeing when you were in LA. When Dee was here, they were filming Once Upon a Time in Hollywood on Sunset. And we drive down a couple of times because one side of Sunset, they decked out like whatever, what was it, 1969 or when, you know, when it was.
1967, early 70.
Yeah. Maybe it was whenever 2001 A Space Odyssey came out. Because remember they decked out.
Oh, late 70s, isn't that? Yeah.
The Pantages Theatre with that. Remember they had the big billboard for it?
Billboard? Yeah.
So we drive down the street and there was like telephone booths and newspaper stands and ye olde milkshake shop, and
a friend of mine posted on their phone that night being stood watching them as they were filming. So that day, you know, we drove down that street. That night they were shooting. It was totally surreal.
Yeah. And then when it came out, it was the first film that me and Jackie saw after Harry was born, because Jackie's mum was here. And so we saved up this special night and we went to Quentin Tarantino's cinema around the corner. It's about like a 10-minute walk, the New Beverly Cinema.
I didn't know he had a cinema.
Yeah, he bought it. And it's like full old school, like, and all the candies sort of like at 80s prices and... Like, and he goes there, or Jackie's seen, I think, Pulp Fiction or something, and he was just sitting there laughing. That's awesome. A bit disturbing. But, so we went to see it there, and we went, have you seen it yet, Dee?
No.
Oh, buddy.
I didn't get to see it, no.
Gotta see it, very good. But.
I'm going to download that, I'm going to see that, I'm going to watch that.
In the film. He's going to download it on iTunes, everyone.
yeah, of course.
I just want to throw that in. In the film, Sharon Tate famously goes to what is it called? El Paso or something. The Mexican restaurant that's just down the street. She went there for her last meal. And so we went there to have dinner before the movie. And... So then we in there, and then it's in the film, and then they walk out of the restaurant, and at the cinema we're at, in the film, they're having a premiere for a porno film. And that's the cinema we're in, watching the... Like, it was like this... Like,
because you went in before you even knew it was in the movie.
Yes! So, like, I'm like, we're in that cinema. Just there. It was very bizarre. So I feel like I've got a real life, like sort of Back to the Future 2 alternate universe connection to this film.
No, I can see that if I and see if I can spot the streets that we drove down.
Yeah, if anyone else, hang around, Jeffro, if you can. Hmm. But if anyone wants to call in to chat with me, Dee, and Jeffro, the link is in the YouTube show notes and in the chat. Now, Dee, I remember from we met at that concert the night before Celebration.
Yeah.
Because Tom Bell, I met him the That's week right. before, and he introduced me to you. And he's your what creature were you again? What species is that?
Abjurians. We were the two Abjurians in Maz's castle, and we were twin brothers. So I was Cratinus, and he was Prashy. Prashy and Cratinus.
What a team! What a team! Oh, and so yeah. I met you at the I met Sam there as well, and
yes.
I was like, come, hey, I just met you, right? But we're going to be real good friends in the future. So get on a train, couple of days, come see me. It's an hour away. And then you'll do a fake radio show with me in front of all these people. It'll be the best fun. And you were quite hesitant to go to Celebration. What was sort of, I'm interested because we've sort of been talking all this weekend about our favorite Celebration memories and all that sort of stuff. But why, first of all, why were you hesitant to go?
I was hesitant because I hadn't done any interviews regarding Star Wars up until that point, you know. I think I'm not sure if it was before or after an interview had crept in with Jedi News, and I'd done an interview with Mark Newbold. An interview with Mark. Which was great, and I think that was very reassuring. So I'm not quite sure at what point that happened. I'm not sure if it happened before our interview or after, but during that period, it was kind of like, well, I'm not sure what I'm allowed to say and what I'm not allowed to say. But then something happened inside, which is kind of like, well,
incessant, you know, text messages.
No. Well, they might have helped, right?
I've asked Biggs, but I'm not sure if he's coming. Please come.
Well, no, it was this thing where, look, I know Star Wars. I believe that I know what you are supposed to say and what you can't say, and what you can in terms of what you can reveal and what you can't reveal, and how in depth you can go. And I've done interviews before with my band and things like that. And so it was, you know, it was one of these things where, okay, cool. You know, the pressure was, I was like, well, maybe I could do that. But then the pressure was on in terms of it being at a celebration. Like I'd only been to a celebration briefly, I think the year before. And that was just me walking through and just seeing what the whole thing was about, you know. I didn't get to see any talks or anything like that. I remember buying like loads of little tiny things, odd things and thing, you know, those kind of like braces you put on your laces, you know, and it's got a tag on it, you know. And
Yeah.
I remember picking up loads of those. Like I've still got some of those Rebel and Jedi ones and things like that. So I remember finding those, thinking, whoa. And then it was just like, well, okay, you know, you explain to me that there's going to be like a little stand and people are going to be sitting there and things like that. And I think Tom had also said, look, don't worry, man, it's going to be cool. I did a chat with him before, and I think that was it. I think I listened to your interview with Tom. And then I was like, okay, maybe I can do this. I can do this. Suck it up, D. I can do this. You know, and it was one of the best experiences that I had because of the whole environment. And, you know, you weren't asking me questions about like tell me what happens in this movie. You know, and if you were, it was playful, but it wasn't like I was being badgered for anything like that. You know,
what's Han Solo really like?
Well, you think he's a scoundrel, he's worse, you know. So it's kind of one of those things where something I was really nervous about turned into such a fantastic experience, you know. And I felt like I bonded with you, man. I felt like I bonded with you on that show because I got what you were about. I got your humor. I got most importantly that you're just as big as a fan as I am, you know. So it was like, oh no, this can work. But yeah, that was, you know, and just you were talking about that whole environment, that whole thing, and the whole production crew were there, you know, and the audience that you had was so lovely and just interested, you know. It was a great day.
Yeah, the audience, they make it. There's nothing like doing it in front of like a live audience, even like this weekend doing the streams and having people in the chat sort of happy to be doing something live and stuff like that. It's like the feedback you get back, like when you're like in front of people, it is, oh man, it's the best energy. And yeah, you know, that's sort of the thing I miss of celebration. It's just, you're like, even if you're at home watching on the live stream, like you're pretty excited non-stop for 4 days.
yeah, that's me. I'm watching it on the stream too.
Yeah. I did Anaheim 2015 on the stream because I was back in Australia, and I felt like I had a real good time. And yeah, all I spent money on was I think KFC. I think I was just eating that and watching the live stream and just milking every little YouTube thing I could find of it.
Is that the Anaheim one where they revealed BB-8 for the first time?
Yes.
Did you see that, Jethro?
Did you see that? I remember watching the replay. So, I mean, it was a very memorable moment. So different from anything we'd seen before. So, absolutely. That was a groundbreaking sort of video.
That was epic. It was just one of those magical moments, and no one saw it coming. I didn't see it coming. I've got goosebumps right now. You know, I didn't see it coming, and out rolls BB-8.
When I think back, what I love about it is, like, I am pained with cynicism. And because most of the time, like, when I'm talking to you, I'm talking about Star Wars, like I'm still cynical about Star Wars, but not as much because I'm also reverting back to 12-year-old excitement, right?
Oh, yeah.
And the thing I love about BB-8 is the way he's revealed. He smashed my cynicism. He just rolled through it. Because I saw that trailer, like the first trailer before Celebration. I think it was like the Thanksgiving one. And he's rolling along, you know, going towards the quad jumper or what, or maybe he's warning. Anyway, he's rolling in Jakku.
He's following Rey and Finn.
Yeah. And you see it and it's like, well, that isn't realistic. Like, how it wouldn't be able to sit up like that. So like, why, you know, it's just not real. It's not realistic. But I'm like, oh yeah, whatever, but it's not realistic. Like, that's a bit goofy. And remember the catchphrase of the Christopher Reeve Superman? And it's like, you will believe a man can fly or whatever.
Yeah, that was awesome.
When he rolled out on the stage, I was like, oh, I believe. Oh. Like, I was just, I was so 12. I was like, this is real. It was like seeing R2-D2 and C-3PO at Man's Chinese Theater in those old documentaries. Yeah. And you're like, they're real. They're like roboting around the streets. Like, this is their day off from acting. And to have him roll out, I was just like, it was so exciting. And I was so stunned by it. And I remember, because Jackie was in America, and I was like, oh, you got to watch this BB-8 thing. like, it's, and she's like, oh, yeah, whatever. And then she watched it and she was like, oh, wow, that's actually exceptional. Yes.
Dude, it, you know, and see, I'd seen a few of the different versions that were used in the movie, you know, for different scenes and things like that. And even I was blown away, and I'm still blown away. I think even on Solo, behind the set of the saloon where they were gambling, playing sabacc, mm-hmm. Matt Denton was sat at a desk, and he was building a few more, because I think he was sending them over to Lucasfilm, and he had the an original BB-8 just sat there. And then I start, and as I walked past, BB-8 came with me. You know? And I'm chatting to this droid, and this droid is reacting to me. And I know Matt's doing that, but when BB-8 is looking at you, keeping up with you, and chatting to you, and responding to what you're saying, that's the only thing that is real at that present moment in time. Yeah, I have no idea what kind of brain you need to make something like that. I am baffled by Josh Lee and Matt Denton for inventing this thing and creating this thing. You can tell me how it works. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, because I don't understand that language. you know, I can't comprehend you. So I don't understand. But when that thing is, when that little dude is rolling and he's talking to you, I'm sorry. What that experience you had is always there. I believe it's going to always be there with me. If I see BBA, it's always like that, you know. And to get to Solo, and you know, he's not even in Solo, but Matt's backstage. He's working on that while he's working on Six Eyes.
That could have started some really weird rumors.
What's that?
Oh, BB-8's in Solo. How does that work? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But yeah, you know, I think Matt was in between working on that and Six Eyes and getting ready to operate with Richard Coombs on that.
Six Eyes.
Yeah, at the gambling table. What's his name?
Ah, okay, yeah.
Do you remember his name? What's his name? Panix? Is that Panix?
I don't.
Oh, you gotta look that one up.
I know who Reyes is. That's come on.
But yeah, and so, and you know, and if he invented and created BB-8 with Josh Lee, you know, and he builds the most sophisticated head with these gyros that as the actor moves, it will instinctively blink, you know, let alone where they want to direct the eyes to look, like if they're going to look down at Han Solo's cards and then look back up and whatever. But
I do have to say, if you're just listening to the podcast, you are missing a visual feast, as Details has got his fingers up to represent every tentacle eyeball. He's really painting a picture here. It's he knows his creature work and his charade. So he's killing it on the live stream. You're doing the visual justice. I'm glad I went to so much trouble to get this live stream thing worked out, because you have mastered the medium, D. That was some great eyeball tentacle work. I salute you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You know, you know, but I do have to say this, that in that movie, that is the best sequence for me in that entire movie, you know, and that is literally because I was offset like everybody else behind the set and everything like that, looking at the big screen. And that's when Matt and Richard and Derek Arnold, who's wearing it, were then told, okay, now look down at Han's cards, which the eyes, I have to bring the eyes up again, which the eyes did. And then they said, oh, now look away, hand catch him. And then he looks away and he's like, all in one take. That wasn't rehearsed, dude. I'm like, I lost my poodoo when I saw that. It was just totally, totally amazing to watch that. And that's what they do. Yeah, this is the best in the world. The puppeteers, animatronics, that's what they do. And I told Richard afterwards, and Richard was so moved when I said that that's the best thing I've ever seen in my entire life. You know, because it wasn't like, oh, let's rehearse this. This is, you know, they're designed to be independent and move, but to take direction and be able to follow that and create that, just, oh, unbelievable. We've got a new person in. Hey, dude.
Hey, man, how are you?
I think we've got Dallas Wood.
How are you, sir?
Hey, Dallas, what's going on, man?
Oh, you know, I got finished with work and I saw you had the invite, so I'm like, oh, I'll jump on.
Sweet, buddy.
Oh, yeah.
Dallas Wood from the Bad Motivators. That is, it is good to see that beard in person. That is.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
You could really do some shoplifting with that thing.
I'm hiding a small family of birds in here.
Nice. Is that how you got all the, is that how you got all those pups behind you? You just tuck them up the beard and
oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Chin them out.
There's so many more pups than just what you can see. It's not even funny.
what's your golden celebration moment, buddy?
From last time or from
just from whenever?
It's one of two things. It's always like the first time I see people I haven't seen in a long time and we only see each other at celebrations. Anybody in that situation. And then for me as a big time collector, it's when I find the stuff that I set out to get and I get it naturally, not on the second hand, you know, like walk into that booth and it's not, you know, that's what it caught, like getting those exclusives. Ooh, that's just, the panels are fun. The panels are fun. The autographs are fun. But for me, those are my two things that like I'm definitely missing out on this year.
The soothing buzz of a purchase.
There's no other drug that can even replicate that kind of feeling. Also shopping with Donald Faison.
I haven't gotten over picking up a Millennium Falcon a while back. So I'm totally there with you, buddy.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. This last time though, meeting Billy Dee Williams was awesome.
Oh, nice.
Wow. Yeah.
That's, I don't know how you'd be in the presence of such coolness. Like, I sort of just missed getting to interview him at the last one on the red carpet thing. And I was like sweating. I was like this dude is like, what if he's just so cool? Like, I felt like Ralph Malf's about to meet Fonzie or something. That's a very current reference for all the kids out there.
so up to date.
Hey, so what were you saying? You went shopping with Donald Faison?
Faison, yeah. He was in one of the booths I was in Chicago last year.
Oh, tight.
Yeah, that was awesome. Like, I didn't bother him or anything, but I love Scrubs, and I was just like, can I get an eagle? And he was like, eagle!
I'm a huge fan of Scrubs.
Isn't that a great show?
And then for him to enter into the Star Wars realm and stuff, it was like, whoa, yes.
Yeah, I got a lot of love for Hype Faison.
Alex from Star Wars Explained got a photo on his back, which is some Scrubs reference. Is that the eagle?
Yeah.
Yeah. So so you didn't get on his back, did you?
Oh, no.
Oh, him and JD, yes.
Yes. Yeah, they do he kind of like JD will ride him. And he goes, eagle. They go, eagle. It's fun.
Do you have any questions for D about life on the Star Wars set?
Yeah, D. How it's got to be a balance between sweating in the costumes in the heat when you're in the heat and then just being around all that awesomeness. It probably is worth dealing with the discomfort. Is that true?
Hell yeah. Yeah, it's that. It's that I'm, it's like, there are a couple of things that I have to be vigilant about, and the people that are with me, who provide me with the water and air from time to time and stuff like that. keep monitors on. But if you're in one of those foam heads for about longer than 20 minutes, what can happen is the chemicals that they're made out of, will have you pass out and you will not see it coming. All right. And being very aware of that, I would always kind of monitor my breathing and kind of work out where I'm pointing my mouth to get as much air out of a costume. But generally, I try and use up as little energy as I could in between the takes, just so that I can just stay in this costume and I can look around and people can't see your eyes usually. So yeah. I'm staring at everything. I'm just looking at everyone and taking it all in. I think there was one scene in Solo where Tom and I are dressed up as Gotterites. You might see us for a couple of seconds. We're these ugly little, well, I say we're ugly, but you know. Tom strongly disagrees about the creature look of these kind of like mole-like characters. They're like naked moles and things with these beaver teeth. And there was one scene that we were shooting where we were cheering on the droids that were having the fight. And this kept going on, just take after take after take after take. And then as soon as you finish one, it's just like, okay, reset, okay, now let's go. And doing that, and I couldn't get enough oxygen in. So at some point, I just, in the middle of it, just said, stop, 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 stop. I cannot breathe. And someone came rushing over to Jimmy opened the mouth a little bit, put some air in there. But if anything, I would be able to manage that. The heat I can handle. The heat I can handle for a set. I mean, Tom and I were sat in Maz's castle right next to the fire pit.
Every time
someone will come over, you okay, do you need some air? No, do you need some water? Yeah, a little bit of water. But the suit was actually protecting me from the heat, believe it or not. It wasn't melting, but the face wasn't melting, but it was protecting me. And then another thing that I did was for Solo, I was playing a character called Regineer Teed. He was one of the Cloud Riders, lizard-faced guy. Mm-hmm. We were going to be in disguise, being part of Enfys Nest. Hey, there's the dude.
And so
his disguise was like this sack, this onion head type sack over his head. And I'm like, hang on, so I'm going to be wearing a mask, and then we're putting another mask on top. And we're going to be in Spain in the heat, right? Yeah, keep it like that. I'll describe a little bit. In the heat. And then what happened was they designed a frame, a soft foam frame, which was the same shape as that head, which the onion sack thing that I call was put on top of. And that was out of this really fine type of linen. So I could breathe through it. I could see just about through it. But this main head, under his chin, which you can't see, is a little bit of mesh, which was letting some air in. But that wasn't going to be enough for me. So what I then did, I got Vanessa in Fabrication to arrange a tube. So I had a tube about the size of a snorkeling tube. And I could put that in my mouth and it would lead out over the back. So where that material is on that shoulder, underneath that is the exit point for the tube that I've got in my mouth, right? And so literally I was breathing out of my mouth, and this was also helping my eyes. You can't see, but there are a deep blue, a blue shade of some form of plastic, and there's a tiny little hole imprint in those lenses. But if I didn't have the tube in my mouth, they would steam up and I would still struggle to see out of those tiny little holes.
Oh, that's like when you wear a face mask and sunglasses. It's the worst.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So literally, because the only air that's generally in that head is what's coming through that tiny slit in the mouth, a little bit under the chin, and through the tiny little holes in the eyes. But if I just breathed it through that tube, all the air was exiting out over my right shoulder. And so there was no air to fog up that head. So I could literally wear that head for an hour or more. And that tube was assigned to that head specifically, because I knew I wouldn't be able to wear that head for long. And I wanted to stay in those heads as long as I could, simply because we don't get a rehearsal. Yeah. We get movement rehearsals with Paul Casey. And that's not, and that's generally not always with those types of heads or in the right type of environment. Staying in that head, staying in that costume meant that I became more acclimatized to how I could see, how I could move, what I was supposed to be doing. And that little box radio on the left shoulder there was joked to be I was joking around and saying it was an iPod, you know, and all I'm doing is listening to Prince 24/7, you know. That was the but yes, wearing those heads, it's like wearing the suits. Dude, if someone said to you, look, we're going to put you in a suit, but you're going to be in that suit for about 4 hours. Not that that was the case for Star Wars, but they said, you're going to be in that suit for about 4 hours and you're going to be in Star Wars. Will you mind? How you got a problem with that? Or do we need to find someone else? What would you say?
No brainer. Yeah. Where do I sign?
There you go. And funny enough, I know people that I'd heard stories of people that, bailed on wearing a stormtrooper costume, and that was only for an hour. You know, it was too uncomfortable, and I have, you know, I can't imagine what they were expecting it to feel like, you know. And at some point, it's kind of like where you are and what you're a part of is so much bigger than how you're feeling constraint or your discomfort.
You know? I'm glad you see it the way I see it. That's how I would be. I mean, I would recognize my discomfort, but so much greatness is going on. I've just got to, you know, totally jealous, man.
D, this is like, you went to Spain to film this.
Yeah.
What was it like? Because normally you're like, I presume you just travel from home every day normally. Yeah. Did you live close enough to, yeah. What was it like to go on a little Star Wars excursion to Spain on a plane? Like, were you on the plane with other Star Wars people? This sounds terribly exciting.
Sounds great to me.
Look, this, you know, this was the surprise gift that Neil kept giving me, you know, and it started with The Last Jedi. I wasn't expected to go to Dubrovnik. I wasn't expecting to go to Croatia at all, you know. And then at the last minute, maybe a week and a half before it happened, it was like, oh, D, you're going or whatever. I'm like, okay, you know. And then also with the Spain, it's just this thing where you're aware that this production, you know, has deemed you valuable enough to take with you and deemed you necessary to be over there, because I think that's the thing with the visas. You have to prove that person is necessary, or that person is the only one who can do it, type of thing.
Yeah, like an extraordinarily talented, and
yeah, like a 0-1 visa, something similar to that. So Neil could vouch for all of that, being the boss and saying, well, this person does this and this.
No one breathes to the side of a poisonous mask like detail.
No, don't say the poisonous, you know, it's, you know, I don't know.
No one is more BPA resistant.
Yeah, no one can survive a costume like D. And some of the costumes are very different as well. But when you're away, the only thing that I kept thinking about, I'm like, wow, maybe this is what it was like for the original guys when they were taken to
Tunisia.
Tunisia, yes. you know, or when they were taken to, where did they film? Was it Iceland or Greenland?
Vince, Norway.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. So when they were taken to Norway, you know, it's kind of, I'm like, maybe that's how it felt for them. And I'm thinking about the crew rather than the actors, because you think, well, the actors will be on their private jets or whatever. And I didn't see any of the actors on the plane that we went out. I think they were there earlier, got there early to acclimatize or whatever, or later, I have no idea. But just being on a plane with these bunch of people that are all making this movie, you know, it was just like, that's like a family trip. Right, you know, and then you're all kind of there's a register taken to get you onto the bus to make sure everybody is allocated, and then the buses will take you to a certain hotel, and some of them go to a different hotel that's pretty much nearby.
Everyone went to Denny's for free food.
Can you imagine? You know, and then you're also, you know, one of the things you're told is don't wear anything Star Wars related, you know, because there's some fans over there. Maybe there are a few fans over there, and we don't normally know too much or anything like that.
So D wears his best Spock t-shirt and
goes undercover. I'm like, hey, everybody, hey. You know, you know, and it's kind of, it's very, very surreal. And then what gets you is that you're going to get a wake-up call. And that wake-up call is probably going to be at 4 or 5 in the morning, you know. And you have to be downstairs by about 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock. And we're going to take you up to the set. And it's just, whoa.
Listen, I hate the mornings. And having a son has...
Yeah.
Very quickly expanded my ability to get up because I just have to.
Yeah.
Like I don't, it's not like there's no snooze button on the child. Hey, hey, if there is Dallas, can you tell me? Because I would love it. But so I like for anything, getting up to get planes and stuff, but
tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What's it like to get woken up at 5 in the morning and you're like within the first 5 seconds of you being awake and you're like, I'm going to Star Wars today. What is that like?
It's hard enough to get off to sleep because of the excitement, you know? And so it can be difficult. I'm not a morning person either, but, the sooner I can get off to sleep, the better, because otherwise it's just less hours I get to spend in dreamland. But when that alarm goes off, you know, or I get that phone, that wake up call, you know, game is on. And normally I'm awake maybe 20 minutes, 15 minutes before the alarm.
Well, you should.
but it's instinctive, you know, it's that inner clock. And that's like, man, this is for Star Wars, man. This isn't for, you know, any other reason other than Star Wars. I'm not a morning person. If there's a film that I'm involved in or a TV thing or whatever, it's like, yeah, this is work and I get it. I'm going to turn up to set. I'm going to do my thing. But it's a different thing when it's Star Wars. Yeah, there is even less worry or concern about getting up at the crack of dawn. And bless you with Harrison. Look, he's gotten so big. I remember seeing him when I came to see you. And he was, what was he, a week old, 2 weeks old?
Yeah, it would have been, that was one of the first things I did was hang out with you. So it was maybe a month or something. But yeah, he's just expanding. He's taking up a lot more room in the house. I don't know what's going on. But, Who was directing you in Spain?
In Spain, it was Phil Lord and Chris Miller.
Ah, and so is sort of what made the film from that segment mostly that stuff, or did they refilm stuff back in London, or
we filmed quite a bit of stuff in Pinewood. Like, they built like this whole sand section, and you had the blue boards or whatever which they were going to put the background on, and my scenes were quite segmented, so I couldn't get a bead on how much was being added or what was being changed to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. Even when I was out in Spain, there were things being shot like further down, like where you see the Falcon in that movie. We weren't allowed, much of the crew weren't allowed to go down there. It was just like, the principals are shooting, when they come up, we'll be shooting your next bits and things like that. And so, I'm still curious as to how they managed to piece that together. It's just a work of art and nothing short of what we know ILM are capable of doing. So, yeah, I know there was tons of stuff like that. I know we shot, like there's an overhead shot you see of after Emphasis is taking down Dryden's enforcers. Oh, I can't remember what they're called. Maybe they're called enforcers. But after Emphasis taken them down, and then there's an overhead shot, and I think I'm bottom left. I know that was Pinewood.
Okay.
You know, but yeah, you know, there are things like I remember being out in that desert and meeting a guy called Chaz who made the speeders and the pod bikes and things like that, and him letting me sit. I remember sitting on one of those speeder bikes. I sat on it all day because it was there. You know, it's like, if it's there, you know, no one's using it, can I just sit on that? You know, and he would explain to me, he says, oh, I've got this part's from a fighter jet, and this part comes from an old tank, and this bit's from a Rolls Royce, his passion, and I'm taking it all in, and all I'm caring about, all I'm seeing in my head are trees. You know, I'm darting through trees, you know, no trees on the desert, but I'm taken back to that moment, and it was just, yeah, just amazing.
We've got a question in the chat from Yet It Is, a question for D. Please forgive me if you've answered this already. I'm sure you have in some time on a pod, but what was your favorite movie to be a part of? Can you pick your favorite from all your filmatic Star Wars children, as they were?
That's difficult because they're all based around the characters that I play, and each one of those have such a huge amount of love for me. You know, it's like picking my favorite Star Wars movie. Yeah, it's Star Wars because it was the first. And maybe it's the Force Awakens because that was my first introduction with Tom Bell into this galaxy far, far away, you know, and from there things were able to grow and take shape in one form or another, whether it was a droid, whether it was an alien, whether it was a pike, you know, it all came from there. And had Tom and I done a really bad job, you know, on The Force Awakens, we wouldn't have had that call back. You know, I don't think they were that desperate for numbers that they're like, oh, we'll have them back. But no, you know, and I remember every moment of being in Maz's castle and wearing that costume and wearing that head, and how infectious that character was in terms of lifting the tone and the vibe in between takes. you know, just sitting there laughing away, and me and Tom just bouncing off one another, and then someone looking at us quite oddly, and not being certain if they're scared of the heads or finding them funny, and then start laughing, and then everyone starts giggling to a point, you know, and everyone knows where you are, everyone knows what you're doing. And also, while I'm doing that, I'm looking around and I'm thinking, well, there is no other better place to be to do this. This is what this character does, and I'm still wearing their head. So until I take the head off, this is who the character is. You know, I wouldn't say it was method, you know, but it was that moment where you're totally self-aware. You're aware of what's going on around you, who's around you, where you are. And also knowing that there are at least three or four cameras trained on you all throughout, just in case there's a take that you, something that you do that they can place somewhere or wherever. But that was my understanding, because I, up until that moment, I've been watching the prequels and the DVD Blu-rays of the behind the scenes, which is the best behind the scenes stuff ever on DVDs ever made. Because there's just so much of it.
Yeah.
And they describe how George, you know, says, oh, well, those two people shouldn't be in that scene, or something needs to change, or we need to add someone to that scene. And they'll take them from somewhere else, put them in, and you wouldn't even know, you know? So I'm like, well, I just got to stay in character, because you just don't know what's going to happen, you know? And it was such a beautiful sequence and scene to be a part of, because this was the first time anyone's bringing Star Wars back since the prequels. This is where we're starting, and now we're in a cantina with aliens. Is it going to be a boring affair? Not if D's in there. There was a lot of love being given and being absorbed because of the moment. And it was acceptable. It was acceptable by production, and JJ loved it, and my boss Neil loved it. You know, it was acceptable because a lot of people felt that this is what Star Wars is about. And to be a part of that, that was beautiful. So yeah, The Force Awakens, to answer
that question. The thing about Mars's Castle, it's so special because, like, it's a trope of Star Wars. It's like, you know, Cantina, Jabba's Palace, even like the nightclub scene in like Attack of the Clones. Like, we love those, even, I know Dallas will have my back on this one, the Cantina scene in The Mandalorian Episode 5, The Gunslinger, Toro Calican. Yes.
All they had to have was R5 in the cantina, and I was sold on that. Bad Motivator was there himself.
I like how two of our favorite characters were there hanging out together.
The Mandalorian. What a magnificent, achievement. And also, it takes us back to George's original idea of Star Wars being episodic, you know, let alone the saga that we have. You can cut it up into half an hour segments and put it out there. That's fine. But to give us The Mandalorian, the way that it's being delivered, the way it's being written, the style of the show, the score, I've been addicted to watching that. You know, the style is matches, you know, the way he'll draw the gun from the hip, the way that he just looks, and
it's definitely that good cross of a spaghetti western from Sierra Leone, and you know, you've got like Kurosawa, all that vibe, all there, all George's original ideas, all those vibes are there.
My favorite Clint Eastwood movie is High Plains Drifter.
That's a good one.
Yeah, but that's, you know, and it's got a lot of that in it, you know. And then there's Pale Rider, and obviously Unforgiven and things like that. But
Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, yeah.
Oh, you know, it's just this majestic guy. He doesn't need to say nothing, you know, like when he's riding into town. You just got shots of him and people going, you know. We're sat at home watching the man long going, oh, you know, it's just, yeah. Yeah, I can't say enough about that show. I love it. You can't tell.
Yes. Oh, me too. I can't say how happy I am just through sheer luck, will of the force, that we're going to go get to see those like this year. It just like fills me with such joy that it's like it's 2 months every Friday. Got something to look forward to. Going to have excitement. I'm going to be delighted. Ah, the best.
But then also one of the most magnificent, one of the most beautiful stories to be told within the Star Wars universe is the story of Ahsoka. You know, it's one thing to be a Jedi and you know what side you're on, you know what stance you have, you know what stance the dark side has, you know, and there is no in between other than right and wrong. And she finds that it's very difficult to see the world like that or the people that they interact with like that, because there is a lot of gray, you know, mixed up in there. And how she feels abandoned and let down by the establishment that she's grown up in, you know, to then walk away from it, you know. That story, I mean, when I was over there, I was hanging out with Chris Bartlett, who plays Zero in The Mandalorian and things like that. I was staying with him and his wife, Rachel. I love them. And we were talking to a friend of theirs, Sheila, who's like an editor. I think she's edited for George Lucas. It just happened to come up, you know, and it's like, what? And I said, it's a shame that we'll never get to see that other than in the cartoons. And then, you know, Chris says to me, he goes, well, it is Disney. You never know. Next thing you know, as far as I know, he's probably still attached to The Mandalorian. And as far as I know, Ahsoka's got to be in it, you know? So that, and knowing that we already know her backstory, if you know the Clone Wars, we know her backstory. So we know where she's come from and what type of character she is. And to see that live action is literally going to blow my mind. Literally going to blow my mind.
It was nice knowing you, buddy.
Thank you. Thank you.
It is like, yeah, I can't even like visualize it. Like it's sort of,
it seems
so unrealistic that character will be in that show, like with those, like it's just, like, you know, I'm not like the biggest Ahsoka fan, but I like her, but I just couldn't imagine what it's like if you're ride or die Ahsoka, do you know what I mean? Like last night we had two people with Ahsoka tattoos. Oh, wow. What that experience would be like to see someone you love so dearly, sort of start off as a little kid, a teenager, yes, in the cartoon, and then she's like an adult lady in live action. Like
what's really going to be trippy about it is that it's in the hands of people that gave us the first season. So there was nothing more to assume that it's gonna be awesome. There's just gonna be so much awesomeness on the screen, you know. And whether she's in more than one episode or not, who knows? You know, whether it's kind of introducing her to go on and do more stuff, or whether they've got more stuff that they want to shoot regarding her. It just opens that up. But just to see that character. You know, I'm a big fan of the Clone Wars, and one of the best characters, one of my favorite characters in that is Cad Bane. I love Cad Bane. Mm-hmm. If I saw Cad Bane in something, it would be like a Boba Fett fan seeing Boba Fett. Yeah. If someone said to me, "D, we want you to put on that costume and be Cad Bane," I'm not sure what would happen first, whether I'd pass out or whether I would actually shoot it and then pass out. But there's some gray area there. I have no idea what would ever happen. But, you know, I can understand the love. I can understand that love and passion that they have. but for her story, like I loved Ahsoka, not really mad on her, but I love Ahsoka, and her story is epic. It's epic. All we've had is the good versus the bad, the light versus the dark, you know, Jedi versus the Sith. To have a Jedi be conflicted by levels of, I don't know, emotion and kind of saying, well, no, it's not just one way or the other. There are many factors taken here. That's the story. That's the story. But yeah, I dig it. I know what they're feeling. I know what they're going to go through.
Yeah. Jessica Schroeder, our buddy in the chat, says, knowing we're getting live action Ahsoka, and I know I will still swoon and squeal like it was a surprise all along when she shows up. Here's the thing. If it was truly a surprise, would people have health problems?
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like it would be so shocking. It's like that's a big surprise. Do you know what I mean? Like, I remember when like Tarkin appeared in Rogue One, and people in the audience were like, it was Australia, so people were just swearing in the audience. Like, you could just hear these I don't want to like send off any alerts, but there was all the best swear words were like
all the best,
and just you could hear them quite, you could just hear people around the cinema. It was amazing, just this like disbelief.
I can imagine people I know who love Ahsoka having to see a doctor because it's been 4 hours afterwards.
Yeah.
Condition can't be maintained for 4 hours.
but knowing these guys, you know there's going to be a few other gems that are going to pop up that we just don't know about. But that's I'm living for this show. I'm living for this show.
Vince Colt asks, Dee, do you collect the merchandise that has been made with your characters?
That's a good question.
Wait right there.
Oh.
Here we go.
All right. I love this.
I'll point out while Dee is gone, we've done probably about four very in-depth episodes with Dee Tales. Here's one of them, Tales from the Set of the Last Jedi. Where Dee was the most annoying. Dee, don't you think Dee's character in this was sort of like a
Space Karen?
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to say.
Space Karen. They're parking on the beach.
Ah, they're on the beach.
Those beach parkers over there.
So if you want to check out, I think there's about four sort of 2-hour, Dee just tells the most marvelous stories, and they're all available in full on the Patreon at Steel Wars, patreon.com/Steel Wars, and it's $3 a month. You get all this bonus stuff and you get all the back episodes like that. So a bit of a plug while Dee gets his collectibles. What do you got, buddy?
Ooh. That is nice.
Oh,
that is nice.
This was gifted to me by Martin Keeler from Fantatrax. I have another one, of course. But yeah, you know, I have figures. I still have figures in the attic. I've got the Infinity figures and the Infinity game. Have you heard of the Infinity game? It got, mm-hmm. I think, got cancelled quite early on, but it's a beautiful game. Absolutely beautiful. I don't know why they stopped, but I collected all the figures. And the first one that I've got to hand is this beautiful lady.
Ah, nice.
You know, and what you do is you put her on this little plate, and you get to play as this character. So any of these figures that you have, you can be any of these characters in this game. So if you're Ahsoka and you've got two lightsabers, you're playing with two lightsabers. If you're this dude right here.
I've heard about him.
Luke Skywalker. Then you get to play with him. And I've got, and I think I've got all of them. But they're dotted around the house. You know? But yes, I stopped collecting Star Wars figures somewhere in my teens, and then I had no reason. I had no like I had no reason to wear Star Wars stuff. I had no reason to collect any more stuff, you know. But then Force Awakens comes along, and with Force Awakens, I had to make sure that I picked up this little fella.
Nice.
You know,
that's the Sphero, correct?
Yes. Beautiful, amazing little thing. I still need to pick up the R2 one. I love
you mean
R2.
This one?
And the leg comes down, right?
Oh yeah. You gotta like when you control it with your phone, it comes down.
Yeah.
Don't get in a product battle with Dallas. You will come off weeping. You'll be like,
I'll beat you right now. I have Lando in a religious candle. And he has Bespin on his chest. I'm just saying, I'm a big Lando guy.
Meanwhile, I've got the Shockmaster.
Oh, that's awesome.
Awesome. So I since being in some of these movies, it's kind of spawned it's reinvigorated my passion for these figures. But those Infinity figures, they're sculpted so beautifully, there's no way I could not collect those. I've got the Lego figure
yes,
somewhere
on, nice,
yes. He Quetol site. He remains in my my Star Wars crew jacket. There's a pocket on the shoulder there, and he's forever in there. That's where that's where he lives.
Nice.
But yeah. And like I said, I mean, I picked up some vintage stuff. I picked up a speeder bike. Wait right there.
Oh.
Should I bring back the Shockmaster in the meantime?
Man, he is. Oh, you know, like here's his boss. Oh, look at that.
Ah, nice.
That is OG. I am all about that.
Oh, man.
Right? You like that?
Oh,
right.
I love it.
I remember getting it, and it didn't come with the Ewok. Hang on.
That is nice.
All right. For those on audio, D has just busted out a vintage Return of the Jedi boxed Millennium Falcon.
Wow. He's got me, man. He got me. I only have Jabba in the box.
The odd thing is, it's Return of the Jedi box, but the photo is Empire Strikes Back.
It is. There's Lando in his like vinyl cape.
Oh, my stars. Ooh. What a piece of plastic.
Fantastic plastic.
Do you know that the bizarre thing about those Kenner box toys is, like, they were all made in China, but quite often they were actually boxed in Cincinnati.
Yeah. Oddly.
It's so strange, but so quaint when you see photos of them putting, like, the X-Wings in the plastic thing and doing the ties and stuff. I was like, oh, your mum works at the toy factory. that would just be amazing. Hey, Dee, we've got a couple of people asking the same question. We've got Kieran Dodrell and I believe Matthew Thurbin wanting to know if you were at all involved in episode 9.
Unfortunately not. That's why I got to hang out with Steel. While they were filming that, I was in LA.
Hey, don't say it was, don't like, no, don't bring me into it at all. Like,
I wasn't, you didn't take
one for the team for me or anything like that. Like, should I see Steele and his new child?
They called him up and they're like, hey, can you come do Rise of Skywalker? And he's like, I gotta hang out with Steele. This is gonna be tough.
Yeah, he's got a newborn, man. Harrison.
Dude, if you did that and I found out and you knocked on my door, I'd just be like, get out! Get out! You went against everything I believe in.
No. It's like they've been filming that for a few months, and you kind of get an idea, depending on how long a film has been going on, whether they're going to need you or not. You know, like at some point they kind of say, well, we're not sure, we're going to see. And then after a period of time, when they worked out what they're making and who can fit into those things that they're making, etc., that you get a clear enough picture as to whether they're going to need you. And then I had it clarified, because I know my agent got in touch and thinking, well, don't you want D? You know, you just had him on Solo, you know, and they're saying, oh, not this one. We don't have, we haven't built anything for his size or anything like that. And so that was one of those moments of like, oh, okay. You know, and what did cheer me up was the fact that I did go to LA and I was hanging with Chris Bartlett and his wife, and Chris was just, you know, in the middle of filming bits and pieces for The Mandalorian. So it's just like, whoa, dude. And, you know, it's a big deal. And my heart, I have a huge place in my heart for Chris, because he started out by making these costumes just to entertain children, you know, and the costumes were so pristine, you know, and the costume would be C-3PO. Mm-hmm. And then Lucasfilm found out about it eventually, and then had him appear when Anthony Daniels couldn't appear, you know, because he had the suit. And obviously he got to meet Anthony Daniels and worked out that relationship. So whenever Anthony couldn't do it, then Chris would do it. And that for me was just, wow, to finally be recognized by Lucasfilm. And you hadn't even set out to do that. It's just because of the love that you have for Star Wars, which has gotten you to this point. And then for him to land in The Mandalorian, it was just unbelievable to watch and to be around someone whose dreams were literally coming true. So I got to experience a little bit of that with Chris. And then I got to come and see Steele. I got to come and see Steele and family, and made a trip also out to Lucasfilm. it was like a pilgrimage, man. It was just like, oh, it was like Mecca. It's just like, had to go there, had to see the Yoda statue outside, but then taken on the tour. They took me on this tour for, I don't know, maybe it was a few hours. They took me on this tour, saw the cinema inside there. They showed me all the stuff that they were working on, like bits from Captain Marvel, which hadn't come out yet, and all kinds of stuff. And I got to see, like one of my childhood moving moments kind of thing. I don't know how to explain it, but I got to see the little figures that they used in Batteries Not Included. I have so much love for that movie. You know, as a kid, it was just like, it blew my mind when they were just little ships, but then when you realize that they had cities inside them, that was just like, boom. And from the smallest, cutest one to the biggest one. And even there was a sad moment, like I think one of them kind of might die in the movie. I'm not spoiler alerting or anything, but he might have died. And I remember that being quite emotional. But I got to see them in their little casing. And that was like, that was the thing for me. That was amazing. And it was Brian Sims and Margaret Mays, that took me out there to for that experience. I'm friends of Richard and Sarah from Skywalking Through Neverland, but that my whole trip to LA was absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Awesome, man. Normally we at the end we ask what you're looking forward to the most. but I feel like we've already talked about that. Mandalorian.
Oh.
Give us a month. Yeah. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. You know, I was watching something not Star Wars related.
Dare you?
See, so I said I'm not Star Wars related. That blew me away. The only other thing that's blown me away, because it's just something really off tilter, is The Boys.
I haven't seen that yet.
That's a good show. You should check it out.
Ooh, yeah. As far as superheroes and in a world like Watchmen, in a world of reality, and just what if scenario, it was just like, whoa. And after watching that, I then had to get back into The Mandalorian, because that was really heavy and that was just really trippy. So yeah, Mandalorian, it still comes back to The Mandalorian. And it's going to be like one of these TV shows where I don't want to know anything about what's coming. We know Ahsoka's coming at some point. But, you know, just as like Lucasfilm always do, they don't tell you nothing. They don't tell you nothing, and I don't want to know. I didn't know anything about The Mandalorian, and I sat with every episode like this.
Best.
And it's Star Wars, man.
Mm-hmm. That's the good action. That is the good action. So how we will sort of wrap up, because I think we've almost did about 2 hours pretty soon. But how was it after being involved with, you know, the first 4 of the Disney Star Wars films to watch this one from afar? How did you deal with that? I feel like you deal with things far better than I might pine a little bit, but how was that to sort of
I got over my pining during the first couple of months, knowing that my family are working and I'm not there, you know. But then when I got to see that movie, I then thought to myself, you know what? It's the last one. There's no way I would have really wanted to know what was going to happen in this movie. You know, even as far as whatever scene that I could have possibly been in, you know, to know absolutely nothing and watch this movie, I'm watching it and I'm like, there's a surreal part of me that's kind of like, you were a part of this story in a few different little ways. You're a part of this. And I can't quite believe it when I'm watching the movie, because I know nothing about it. I have no association to it. I can't identify, I could identify one or two, but I couldn't identify who was in what suit. So I was really, really distant from it in that regard. But it was beautiful not knowing what was coming and just seeing how they were just going to round it out and finish off this saga. It was a completely different experience. It's very surreal, because not being a part of it, it's just like, well, were you a part of all of them, a part of any of them, you know? And I could always kind of question that, because it's so surreal. It was nice to be able to watch it and not know anything, you know, anything, like even like a split scene that has not, that you don't know anything about anyway, but I knew nothing.
See, I knew you'd handle it better than me. I would have been like, out the front of the studios, David Brent style, sort of just hanging out at the old work. Dee, it's always the best to talk to you, buddy. It's never not a good time. And I so appreciate your friendship. And I know everyone else,
yes,
as well as me, appreciates the enthusiasm. And you do share your experiences with everyone. And like in the chat, you know, tons of people are saying, this is, you know, what I needed, and you know, this is, you know, just, we need some details.
Lots of love to people in the chat. Lots of love to all the people in the chat. Lots of love to you guys, Jeffro and Dallas.
Thanks, man.
Dee, where can the good people of the internet follow your adventures?
I'm on Instagram as digital_star. I'm on Facebook. You can recognize my page because there's always Daffy Duck in the profile. And I'm on Twitter. I'm on Twitter as details. So yeah, I'm not that hard to find.
Nice. Jeffro, have you got any social media you want to plug, buddy?
Not really. So otherwise, the only thing I've got is a Facebook page called Talk Nerdy to Me. So that I do with a couple of Star Wars nerds, Darren Maxwell and Peter Sims. But other than that, that's about my involvement.
Nice. Good crew. Good crew. Say hi to those guys next time you talk to them.
I will. I'll name drop you on Wednesday when we have our next broadcast.
Please drop it. Please drop it. It's a very tough name. It can handle dropping. I don't know why I'm teasing myself now for my silly name. Dallas Wood, the Bad Motivators, one of my favorites. Tell the good people where to track you down and listen to your show.
My show is at the Bad Motivators. You can find it anywhere on, you can find your podcasts, and you can find me on Twitter at Tarkin Tangents. And yeah, Black Lives Matter, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Hi. Hey. And hear, hear. Tomorrow, if you're around, probably around the same time, maybe a little bit later, we will put up a premiere of an enhanced episode of Star Wars Year by Podcast. It's the podcast that Horst Burkhart from the Blue Harvest podcast and I do, where we go through Star Wars history. And if you watch it on YouTube, there's I spend way too long coming up with images that will inform and hopefully also make you laugh when they turn up. Lots of talk about good old days in McDonald's for some reason. Give it up for Carl, our favorite employee. So I think me and Hawes are going to get in the chat and chat and muck around while we do that. So if you are around, and I know people are sort of in a mood to sort of interact with other Star Wars fans this weekend, so check that out. If you come back to my page, it's Steel Wars on YouTube, there'll be like tonight, there'll be a thing where you can schedule it or whatever, and then you can come to the premiere. Also, if you're in a t-shirt purchasing kind of mood, we have got pre-orders going for a rerun of the Yub Nub t-shirt, and we've got the new The Child, the Yodi Hawk, which is a throwback to my favorite ever skateboard graphic of Tony Hawk, where I've changed it there. That's some sweet photoshopping. I'm not sure if you guys can see that.
No, it looks real.
It's it should, because I spent way too long on it. It was I was so desperate to make it so his rails went over the graphic and stuff. So that's all up at merchostore.com. I want to say to everyone in the chat, thank you so much. Thanks to Dee. Thanks to Jeffro. Thanks to Dallas for joining in. Thanks to everyone that hit us with questions. And this has been so fun. I really appreciate it. And what can I say? But may that force be with you.
With you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.